people are keen to highlight the risks for you. And I think to some extent, you need to talk yourself into focusing on the positive, focusing on the potential advantage, what there is to gain, and just making the jump towards that.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is Jakub Kuba Graskar. Did I get it? Am I close? Am I in the ballpark?
Very close, Ken.
All right. Well, he will go by Kuba, which is awesome. Not Gooding Jr., not the actor, although that'd be cool too. But he
has done some acting.
You have done some acting, so maybe look that up on YouTube. But he is the current content marketing manager for Zenpilot. Prior to that, he led a content team of 10 plus marketers, which is no small feat, produced and hosted a live stream series that attracted guests from Google and from Microsoft, and has somehow managed to make being a metalhead bass player his entire personality on LinkedIn. And yes, we will link to his profile so you can check out and see what that means. And now with the Zenpilot team, he is attracting the attention of agencies around the globe who want to fix their project management once and for all. Welcome to the show, Kuba.
Thank you, Kenny. Thank you so much for that nice intro. I'm super excited to be here. I love being a guest on these things. So, and after having hosted so many, so I'm really excited to talk today.
Yeah, you're gonna be on the other side of the mic. You're in the hot seat. We come with the tough questions. So we'll kick things off with what is on your mind today?
Okay. Purposefully, I'm not making it maybe tied exactly to the purpose, the content of the conversation later on. But what is exactly top of mind for me today is doing brave, bold, permanent things. My weekend, and it was just a few days ago, over the weekend, I crossed two things off my bucket list. So on Friday, I went bungee jumping for the first time.
Wow.
If anybody's considering that, let me just share one tip. Don't look down. Okay.
Just immediately, that's what everybody's going to do. Like, don't look down. And you look down.
Just remember, look at the clouds, look at the buildings. That's what the nice lady told me as I was strapping into the harness or whatever you call it. And that really helped me jump in the end. So that's one thing that happened. Second thing that happened is I got my first tattoo the very next day. Are we on video? This one over here.
Snap. Okay.
It's supposed to be a little plus sign. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am now living with the thought of having done something so permanent that besides from, you know, some, you know, laser options, it's for life. So, these are the things that are on my mind right now, Kenny.
All right. Well, one, congratulations. That is a big, bold and brave of you. I've not done either, have considered both, and have some concepts for tattoos. Although I've heard you either become addicted to it or you're one and done. My concern is that I'll go the former and I'll just end up with a number of things, song lyrics that struck me at the time. I might need my wife to help me pump the brakes. Although she has one, dedicated to our nephew, who has survived childhood cancer. But so that was a meaningful one. You can't really argue with that. So I'm waiting for the right inspiration. But what has brought doing big, bold, brave, permanent things? I think that's an interesting caveat onto your thinking. And what have you noticed other people's thoughts being around this? Like what's really common in the thinking around doing those sorts of things?
Common around doing those sorts of things. Well, I mean, the comments I've heard about these particular moves, people really underline the risk. What if X happens? What if Y happens? You know, there's always the potential to, I mean, and this applies obviously to big personal things like bungee jumping, as well as professional things. You know, what about the risk? What if the negative scenario happens, that is always on people's minds, and it takes a healthy amount of resolve to actually make that jump. I mean, just recently, I made a career jump, for example, switching roles from my previous company to now content marketing manager at Zenpilot. So that happened just recently. And well, people are keen to highlight the risks for you. And I think to some extent, you need to talk yourself into focusing on the positive, focusing on the potential advantage, what there is to gain, and just making the jump towards that.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I want to highlight something that you said and maybe explore it a little bit is people are keen to highlight the risks for you. Can you unpack that a little bit more?
Okay, so, well, this was just part of the conversations around any large change that you know, I had lined up or I was telling people about. To unpack this, I think it would be worth to talk about kind of the way people approach this. It reminds me of a book, actually. Have you heard of the book called The Gap and the Gain?
Yep. I have it somewhere. And then I've lined up the new one, 10X is easier than 2X. But yeah, Gap and the Gain is a fantastic book. We'll link to it. It's phenomenal. It's an easy read, too.
Yeah. So I'm going to twist the meaning here a little bit, but I feel like this is the difference. And why people focus so much on the risk is that they focus... what the book talks about is there's two mindsets. You can think about the gap between where you want to be and where you are right now, or you can think about the gain. So all the road that you've traveled up until today, you know, how much momentum you've already got trying to get where you want to be. And the great question that was in that book was, think about yourself 10 years ago. That's what I did to a large extent when I was making big choices like my career change or, you know, or the jump or, you know, both thinking about myself 10 years ago and 10 years from now, how am I going to feel about this? And just both questions came out like, 10 years ago, I would be super excited about it. 10 years from now, definitely I won't regret doing certain risky things in my 30s now, which I don't know exactly when that happens. So I think it's worth seeking out the people who are in the game, so to speak, who, when you bring them a risky idea, when you bring them something that's bold, and there's so many ways it could go wrong, they say, well, yeah, but what if it works out? Those are people worth listening to. Not for everything, of course, but to me, that's been crucial.
No, that's really good. One of the things from that book that stuck with me, and I love the looking the 10 years back, 10 years forward sort of dynamic, but he said, you know, like you can set goals and things by looking forward. And that's the gap between where you are and where you want to be. And there's technically there's nothing wrong. He said, but we need to measure success by looking backwards. And that phrase is a great reminder for me of someone who, like, I'll just beat the living mess out of myself that I'm not further ahead or haven't done more or something like that. But if I were to really look back 10 years, 15, 20 years ago, you know, being in my mid 30s, time of this recording, I think about what actually I have accomplished, and would 25-year-old me, would 15-year-old me be proud of that, be curious about that, be inspired by that. And there's some things where I go, 15-year-old me probably be a little disappointed at a few things because we're all, you know, a little stupid as we're growing up, but there's some other things that I'd look and go, oh yeah, wow. Like I wouldn't have planned that, but that's really cool. I do wonder, go ahead.
There's also the category of that was stupid, but I'm glad I did it either way. You know, not all the risks are going to pay off. And sometimes, but still you're glad, at least
like
you
I'm
had
glad
that
to survive.
You know?
Yeah.
That's how I see it. So actually related to that, I think, just in general, if I were to summarize this thought, it's long-term thinking. backwards or forwards, I find that the more I purposefully put myself in that state of mind where I'm looking at not the coming 2 weeks, the next sprint, or even the next quarter, but what's going to matter 5-10 years from now, again, in my personal and professional life, that really helps. I actually have a practice for it, not to hit you with a second book too early, but there's this concept called vivid vision. I think the TED talk might be a little bit better than the book.
Okay.
And generally speaking, the concept really quickly is when you set a vision for your company, don't make it 3 sentences, make it 4 pages, like a very detailed image of where the company is, let's say 3 years from now. What I did and what I recommend all leaders and professionals do really is to write something like that for yourself for 3 years from a certain date, but on a personal level. All the areas of your life, I wrote a vision where I set in many areas ambitious goals of what I want to have experienced by that day. And it's coming true faster than I thought possible. But that's because I make it a daily habit to look at where I want to be in 3 years from now. And sometimes the activities on that day match up with how I want to proceed to that vision.
It sounds like it's helping you align your choices to that vision that you want to be there. Like, you internalize it, you start making decisions, and those compound over time. And that's probably part of that acceleration you're feeling towards that 3-year vision that maybe it only takes 2 years. Or something like that. Is that you mentioned the book Vivid Vision. Is that is it Cameron Harold? Is that his book?
Yeah, I think you got that right. Yeah. So you're familiar then.
Yeah, I followed him quite a bit for a while, read several of his books. He's got a great story. He's got several awesome books. I think his most recent one was Second in Command. So, and that's sort of like his niche, is that what does it take to be a strong second in command, number two in an organization, COO.
Yeah.
But so great material if you want to go find Cameron out there. And it sounds like, I didn't realize there was a TED talk though. And so that may be
that's how I found it.
More accessible for everybody. So we'll look for that and link that up as well. So in making the big, bold, brave decisions, things that are permanent, is what I feel like I hear you say is, if you write out that big vision, well, it actually might reduce some of the either perceived risk or could help you better justify the risk of taking those bold moves. Is that fair to say?
See, the vision, how it relates to risk taking, I think it's a great filter, you know? So I spoke about it in the self-leadership vein, but when you're talking about leadership of people, I don't think enough leaders are communicating their vision in vivid detail, kind of at the door when people are going to join. And that can be the vision of a role, that can be the vision of where the company is going. What I mean by filter is, once you're really, really detailed about where you want to take the company, like, for example, we're a software development company today, we want to be a software consulting company tomorrow, or alternative path, we want to start building products 3 years from now, you know? Some people are going to gravitate to one, you know, they want to work at the next upcoming McKinsey, and some people are going to gravitate to the other, right? So when you communicate that at the door, I think, at the least, it reduces risk in the sense that the right people come to you, and like a great vision or a great story is so attractive. And well, magnetizing might be a better word, because it attracts and repels. Attracts the right people and repels the ones that long term are not going to work out.
I wish I was wearing one of the shirts I wear commonly from System and Souls. It says, you know, magnetic vision. And so we use that quite a bit. Is you know, it should. Values, vision, culture should attract the right people, repel the wrong ones. Something else that you said that struck me is, you're talking about what's the story that you're telling. And something my coach shared with me that really stuck was in the context of, say, more like business organizational leadership. I think it could apply within like a family unit or some other, you know, philanthropic group. But you need a vision when you cast it to make it really magnetic. Is it's got to be told in such a way or crafted in such a way that everyone can find their role in the story. Right. Yeah. Like they have a part to play. So it's really like it is that invitation in to participate. And if you can't find your role, you're probably not going to, you know, participate in that story for very long. Right. But for those that do, it ends up being a really solidifying element in leadership to say, hey, we're going to go run through these brick walls. And you need people who are really committed if you're going to go run through some brick walls to achieve some big, hairy, audacious goal, you know, as Jim Collins would call it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, part of the vision is also the obstacles you're going to encounter along the way. And you need to be able to say, hey, one of the roles to play is somebody is going to be hitting their head against that wall for a quarter and then find a way to, for example, unlock growth or, you know, to nail, I don't know, our positioning for employer branding, you know, whichever part of the piece that requires. And I'm a really big believer in, you know, there's no life devoid of pain, but we can really choose our pain. And when you see a person who has chosen their pain and consistently is facing that, like for me, it's the pain and stress of public speaking, for example, you know, which is part of why I'm doing this, right? And when you find somebody who's found the pain that they love, it's just really, it's a great feeling to see them in action.
That's really good. So everybody pause, rewind, go listen to that again. Cause if I think if you get nothing else out of it is that you can, you're not going to have a life free of pain. Certainly that's true, but you can choose it. Which I think is a really cool thought. Something I'm very passionate about is helping people understand the agency they have. And I'm not talking about like a creative or a marketing agency or something like that. Just the ability to decide things for themselves. And I think a lot of people have surrendered their agency to their employer or to relationships and other people around them and things like that. And certainly, it doesn't mean like just be selfish and choose everything for yourself, but you have more choices than you may think. And I think pain, in my experience, has been one of those things that it's very easy to believe that you had no choice in which pain or which where your threshold really lies for that type of pain. Is that something that you would agree with or disagree with? And how have you seen that play out in your life and even in the lives of those that you've had the opportunity to lead?
Yeah. Well, first thought that comes to mind is what you're talking about in terms of pain and thinking that it's outside of your control is what this brought to mind is there's a way out of the situation that is causing you pain. But when you really look at the alternative, you're realizing, okay, day to day, I might complain that this is the pain that is being inflicted on me. You know, it's a stressful job. It's, well, for me, that's being in a band, for example, okay? It's really painful. It really is. Trying to fit that in with everything else. I have a three-year-old son, you know, and the word agency really comes up during the terrible twos in the sense of he wants to have agency on the world. Okay. But coming back to the band, it's so tough to fit everything in. It feels like another job. You know, I started playing music, kind of the latest out of my bandmates. So I get harsh feedback about, okay, I mean, we know you're still relatively new, but we need this to be better to be, you know, publishable. But then again, when I look at the alternative of not having this thing that really fills my soul, especially when you get to play live. I am choosing all of the awkwardness and stress and, you know, sleeplessness of actually being in a band. So that's what comes to my mind most immediately. And if I were to talk about a second pain that I think leaders should more readily choose and they're not is... See, I was looking at the questions you usually ask on how leaders think. You know, what leaders are ignoring or something that they should pay more attention to. And here's one thing that I have a strong stance on. Giving the people in your team a lot of face time, okay? Like, I've seen a lot of back and forth about, you know, how, for example, how long should a one-on-one meeting be, you know? Then there's a lot of arguments for making it short and snappy, to the point, focus on tasks. What's blocking you? Okay, here's how I unblock you, and let's get going. Let's start working. And, you know, I was leading a 10-person team at my previous company, and there was a structure. I wasn't the direct manager of all 10 people, which I've heard happens sometimes, and I really sympathize with people in that position. Still, I had, let's say, at the peak point, 5 direct reports. And still, I gave each of them 45 to an hour weekly for a one-on-one session, on top of which I gave them a one-hour monthly session. And I didn't cancel, usually, the weekly one-on-one for the monthly session, because the weekly one-on-one was focused on the day-to-day stuff. The monthly session was focused on deeper conversations, you know, talking about more long-term strategy, or just checking in more deeply with them as a person. And I think a lot of leaders listening to this are going to think, wow, that's a really full calendar, and it's a lot spent just on one-on-one conversations. Whereas, you know, talking more about the strategy or more group meetings, we had some of that. But the reason why I gravitate more towards one-on-one is that it takes a long time, and I mean like a lot of face time on the calendar, for people to really start opening up as people. But once they do, it makes all of the difference. So it depends on your stance as a leader, right? And I think it takes an emotional toll when you start to know, maybe personal details might be too much, but when you start to get immersed in the story of the life of your team members. However, once you connect on that level, and you manage to also as a leader tell them, okay, Here's the story, kind of the trajectory of where I see you, you know, as a person. Here's how this job connects to it, you know. Or, you know, during one of the monthlies, it might be, hey, if you were to leave, where would you like to go? Like, asking even in that sense, you know, I'm invested in you long term as a person. And once you do that, once people realize, okay, this person is here to support me in my career trajectory in general, not just in this role at this company in particular, the conversations totally change, and you make connections that serve you for the rest of your career.
So someone who's hearing you talk about the, you got to meet for an hour weekly and monthly, talk about tasks, but talk about how they're really doing, peeling the layers back. That takes a lot of emotional capacity that maybe somebody didn't spend time developing because it wasn't necessary for them to succeed up to the point that they are. But the higher you go, the more it becomes about winning through people than doing things, tasks well. So how have you grown that emotional capacity bucket? Let's do this for a bucket. You know, like how could we make that bucket bigger? Because it is really draining to be emotionally invested in people and pull those things out and listen intently and be empathetic and go, okay, I'm not only asking the question, but I'm going to listen and care about your answer. And I'm going to allow that answer to inform how I lead. And I know that this could be a weird word, but lead and love you so much that I want to help you get where you want to go as a person, not just as my direct report or a person on my team.
Yeah.
So how do you grow that?
It is a kind of love. I haven't heard it called that way, but it is a kind of love, and all love takes courage to care about somebody, not just as a team member, but as a person, and your life paths crossed. And then how do you help that person exit in a better way than they entered, even for those people that you actually end up letting go, which is especially difficult. So, but to answer your question about building the emotional capacity, to some extent, you already answered it. It is about listening. It is about empathizing with your team members. And a practical way to grow that is, well, first of all, this is one thing to kind of unlock, is that listening is a skill. You need to think of it as a skill. It's like a muscle, and you need to flex your listening muscle. The nice thing is you can practice it a lot when you focus on it, both when you're working, when you're not working. a great frame of mind, and I'm a really, really big believer in when you imagine yourself as a different person, or you like you assign yourself a label or a role, it changes how you act. So, for example, a label that I love, maybe because I've done so many interviews as a host, is like I love the label of interviewer. You're talking with a family member, you're at a party, or you're talking with one of your team members on a call. When you give yourself the label of interviewer, all of a sudden you have a totally different frame of mind. All of a sudden this curiosity wells up that you didn't know you had. And at first it's going to feel unnatural, but that's the beauty of playing a role. You expect it to feel a little weird, a little uncomfortable, especially when you don't step into that role very often. But ultimately it becomes a habit. Of course, it's also great to have certain questions that you go to. There's a great book actually called The Coaching Habit that, and this is one of the questions. Yeah, heard of it?
That's where the first question of the podcast comes from, is what's on your mind is the opening question.
I thought so. Okay, yes. And that's the first question from the 7 questions of The Coaching Habit. What's on your mind? It's a very carefully calibrated question. Because it allows the person to talk about a variety of different things. And some of your reports are going to jump into tasks like, oh, there's this deadline approaching. That's on my mind. Other people are going to tell you, well, I'm getting a dog this week. And I can't stop thinking about that, you know? For example, okay, personally, we've got a cat, but I love both. So, and this is what you find as a leader is that instead of, well, in addition to, for some things, you do need to have an answer or at least a way to find the answer. It's all about the questions. And what's on your mind is an excellent question to start conversations with. I believe in The Coaching Habit, the second question is, and what else? Which is also extremely important because it prompts you to dig deeper and to allow people to just go beyond the surface level. And sometimes in those conversations, I even say, look, we've got an hour on the calendar. I'm sure we've got work stuff to get through, and I want to get through the work stuff, but I want to check in with you. What's on your mind in your life? If you want to share, I'm willing to listen. I think it's also important to reciprocate that. It shouldn't be an interrogation. And that's another scary part. You reveal a little bit about yourself, about your situation. I think it's really important for your people to also see you in situations where you're not feeling 100%, you know? And sharing about that. Some leaders think that it's all about projecting strength. And there needs to be a certainty in you. I think that's where the vision is important. That you keep talking about it, keep communicating it, keep making it kind of detailed and vivid in their minds. But it would be, let me say it like this. When you're watching a movie and you're following a character, it would be a very boring character if they never faced doubt or uncertainty. It wouldn't be relatable. And people want to relate to you as their leader and as a fellow team member, so you need to say a little bit of that as well. So think of it as a skill, listening, ask the right questions, collect them. Coaching Habit is a great place to start, and reciprocate by sharing some of your own thoughts and feelings as well. I feel like those are the things that help you start building this whole area of skills, this emotional area that if you had been an individual contributor up to this point, then you need to. So for some of the listeners, that might be something to work on.
Yeah, which a lovely transition. It's almost like you had the questions ahead of time. So in thinking about this, just sort of tracing a path through where we started about, you know, big, bold, brave, permanent decisions, going through the risk. And I think the risk led us to a place that is maybe one of those hidden risks. Like everybody can say, well, bungee jumping's risky because what if it snaps and you fall on your head, you're dead. Like, or my risky thing, like you said, that is a, well, that was dumb. I'm glad I lived through it, was I've ridden on top of a car going 100 miles an hour. Just latched on to the, rolled down the windows. It was a small car, latched on. My friend and I, we were bored, dumb, and in college. But so thankfully I'm still alive to tell the story, but I think it led us to a place that I, my assumption and some of my experience tell me is, seems riskier than all of that, which is really diving into the emotional and mental well-being of our people that we have the opportunity and the privilege to lead. And so if somebody's listening to this, perhaps it's a leader who's they're in their first real leadership position, or maybe they're tenured, but they're thinking, man, like, I'm great at knocking projects out of the park. But I feel like I struggle to really connect with my people. And I think you gave a lot of, you know, great tips. But if somebody wants to get started, take that first baby step, what's something they could do in the next 24 hours to grow their capacity to take that sort of emotional risk in their leadership?
I think I would really focus on the listening part and on the identity part of what I shared just now. So it's very unlikely that during the next 24 hours, you're not going to have, you know, a longer conversation with somebody. Mm-hmm. It might be a roommate, might be a team member, might be a family member, your spouse, you know, whichever. Mm-hmm. If it's an appropriate conversation, not all of them are, but it's highly likely that you can put yourself in this position of an interviewer and just mm-hmm. consciously focus on this skill of empathy. And I have this habit, or I've had it, where, you know, I was just, it's this scene in Fight Club where they say, you're not really listening, you're just waiting for your turn to speak. That's ingrained in a lot of us. So once you catch yourself doing that, and instead of getting your turn to speak, you go with a question, an open question, a question that prompts the person to talk for so much longer and share so much more. And you ask yourself internally, well, how would I feel about that? I think that's mm-hmm. the very first step towards building that empathy, you know, battery, container, bucket, whatever we're going to call it.
Yeah.
So that's what you can do in the next 24 hours. Just once you have the conversation, like, insist on listening actively, drawing out a little bit more. Once you feel like you've heard, you know, quite a bit, share something from your end mm-hmm. that relates, but not in the way of, it's my turn, but in a way of enhancing what you've heard and to continue the conversation to draw even more and to get to know them on a deeper level. And it's really surprising how, you know, you sit down with like one of your parents, for example, put yourself in that mode, and all of a sudden such different questions come to your mind, questions about mm-hmm. their history, their mindset. I recently became a parent, you know, and immediately I felt like interviewing my parents about so many things. Like, how did you feel at that point? What did you do? What was going through your mind? How did you manage? It's such a deeper conversation. And the nice thing about it is it's not just a skill you're building, but it also mm-hmm. leads to just deep and satisfying connections with people. And that's what not just, you know, our careers, but life is all about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nobody's tombstone is going to say he worked 50 hours a week. Good for him or her. You know, that's, you know, so many people talk about their deathbed, and it's like, they're probably going to wish they spent more time on relationships and a little less time
long-term
pursuing
thinking.
Achievement. So, well, Kuba, I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and experience with us. If people want to connect with you, follow you, learn more from you and about what you're doing, where would you point them?
I like to say I'm a high functioning LinkedIn addict, so definitely look up Jakub Greitzer on LinkedIn. I'm currently at Zenpilot, so it would be great if you were to have a look at Zenpilot as well. And you might be asking yourself, what is Zenpilot and what would make it relevant for you? So let me paint a picture. If you're in a situation where you're at an organization, particularly if you're at, for example, a marketing agency, and project management is not up to snuff, there's chaos, things slip through the cracks, or you've got a team that has an issue with accountability, they've got great intentions, but at the end of the day, and there isn't this feedback loop of this was committed to, this was delivered, and it's not clear, you don't have this visibility. If that's a problem you're facing, then this is the problem that Zenpilot solves. We do that by training your team. We do that by introducing you to a system in one of two project management tools, ClickUp and Teamwork, that is battle tested with hundreds of agencies by this point. That system ensures accountability, visibility, and that when your people log in to work every day, they have a list of things, and these are the things that they are supposed to do, nothing more, nothing less. And that's where the Zen in Zen Pilot comes. It really creates a sense of peace and momentum for your agency. And we've helped organizations like in-house marketing teams as well and some other organizations. So zenpilot.com, we've got a ton of content if you want to learn about it. And the fastest way to fix your project management would be to book a call with us. You'll find the buttons everywhere on the site.
And they also have some great downloads on project management, other things that I've actually consumed. And Andrew and Gray, the co-founders, are just fantastic guys and do some really, really excellent work. So I'm a huge fan of them and wholeheartedly recommend them. You're on LinkedIn, which we're going to put in the show notes so people can reach out, connect, follow you and all the work that you're doing. And until next time, think differently, you'll lead differently. We'll see you next time.